You are listening to yet another production of KFJC's Pandemic Players. Today's episode, Dr. Sinister's Home for Retired Villains, was written by S.G. Brown for the Pandemic Players. Welcome to Dr. Sinister's Home for Retired Villains, where obsolete and vanquished evildoers go to live out the rest of their meaningless lives. It's difficult being a diabolical relic, stuck in your outdated version of treachery, all plans of world domination fading in your rearview magic mirror. When it comes to holding on to their glory days, villains are worse than child actors and high school jocks. And when you have to share cafeteria meals and movie nights with dozens of other washed-up hoodlums, scoundrels, and miscreants, conflicts are bound to arise. At Dr. Sinister's, you never know when someone might turn the swimming pool into a shark pit or bring a death ray to Taco Tuesday. The dining hall teems with the lunchtime crowd. Dozens of the infamous and the nefarious stand in the food line, fill up their plates, and sit down to eat beneath the racks of fluorescent lights that flicker and buzz throughout the room, which has all the charm of a prison cafeteria. Every now and then, a voice comes over the PA system to remind the residents about the rules.
This announcement is to remind you that death rays are not allowed in the dining hall, and to thank you for helping to make Dr. Sinister's a safe space for everyone.
Just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in there.
Professor Moriarty and Dr. Jekyll, two of the longest tenured and most distinguished residents of Dr. Sinister's, share a table.
Puh, death rays. Since when did weapons make for a convincing villain? Tell me, Doc, what happened to good old-fashioned treachery?
Times have changed. Villains today have more technology at their disposal. They'd be remiss not to consider making use of it.
The only true villains are those who use their intellect and other natural-born talents rather than relying on technological tools to get their desired results.
I don't know. I think there's always been a place in our line of work for ingenuity and innovation. After all, not every villain has the ability to outthink his or her adversary. Sometimes you have to use the tools at your disposal, be that brains, brawn, death rays, or supernatural powers.
Whoever's in charge of the kitchen could use some supernatural powers to make this meal edible.
Come now, Moriarty. It's not inedible. You're just being melodramatic.
I'm not being melodramatic. But I wouldn't be surprised if my Salisbury steak was booby-trapped and might explode at any moment.
You have a lot of trust issues, Moriarty.
Of course I have trust issues. I'm a villain, surrounded by other villains.
Well, it doesn't do any good to complain about the food. So why don't you stop playing with your Salisbury steak and eat it?
This isn't Salisbury steak. This is a culinary abomination, an affront to Epicurean delights. They might as well just poison us and get it over with.
If you don't like what they prepared, you don't have to eat it.
I hate it when you transform into your evil side without warning.
Well, you do have a way of bringing out the worst in people. Plus, transforming into my evil side is my kind of thing. Didn't you read the book?
I don't read gothic novels.
You're lost.
Even if you can't control yourself from turning into a lustful, violent barbarian half the time, the least you can do is chew with your mouth closed. Honestly, I don't know how you can eat this disgusting food with such enthusiastic fervor. It's baffling.
You say disgusting, I say delicious.
It's as if someone scraped the Salisbury steak off the pavement, heated it in the microwave, and covered it in gravy. Look at these green beans. They're completely overcooked. This is unacceptable.
Moriarty picks up an overcooked green bean and flings it across the dining hall, hitting Captain Hook in the back of the head. Hook stands up and turns around, a scowl on his face, his gaze darting back and forth before he raises his namesake in the air.
Curse you, Peter Pan!
That idiot is always cursing Peter Pan.
Well, Pan is his nemesis. And if you're not going to eat the rest of your lunch...
Damn it, you vile ogre! I was going to eat my bread pudding. It's the only thing they actually know how to make in this godforsaken place.
You snooze, you lose.
You really are the worst version of yourself.
Do you hear me, Pan? I'll get you for this if it's the last thing I do.
Good luck with that, Captain Crocodile.
I heard that, Moriarty.
Can you hear this? Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock.
You want to take it outside, Professor Plum? Bye.
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 Bye. Punch him in the nose.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
I didn't think dogs were allowed in here.
They're not. The Wicked Witch is just a one-quote wonder.
I like her flying monkeys. They fling poo everywhere.
Hearing the villains egg on a fight, two of Dr. Sinister's henchmen enter the dining hall to try to calm things down.
All right, let's just all rip.
I'm terribly
No need for any bloodshed.
Oh no,
unfair.
But Moriarty started it. He showed bad form. Bad form.
Easy there, Captain. Remember, what's done cannot be undone. Let's leave this place and plot our revenge.
Aye, Lady Macbeth, I will heed your advice. You've escaped my wrath this time, Moriarty. Next time, you won't be so lucky. Death is the only adventure you have left.
But what can I say if you ask what's new? Nothing was with you. Nothing much to do.
You might want to keep an eye out for him. He sounds serious.
I can't take anyone seriously whose nemesis is a boy in tights. It's nice to see your more civilized half again. I must prefer your company to his.
Yeah, he is an acquired taste.
Quite. Are you going to eat your bread pudding?
Yes. What happened to yours?
Your alter ego helped himself to it.
He tends to do that. But don't even think about taking mine unless you want him to come back out and play. You'll have to go get your own.
They ran out. All they have left is peach cobbler, and that gives me gas. Speaking of which, here comes Count Flatulence.
Count Dracula walks across the dining hall, tray in hand, saying good evening to everyone he passes.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Play nice, Moriarty. He's one of us. And he doesn't have many other friends here.
That's probably because he farts all the time and makes those infernal sucking sounds when he's reading. Not to mention that he always thinks it's evening.
Dementia and senility are unfortunate side effects of growing older. Even when you're an immortal creature of the night. When you've celebrated more than half a millennia of birthdays, the mind can begin to reshape reality. And I know a thing or two about reshaping reality.
Yeah, too bad your alter ego doesn't know a thing or two about how to chew with his mouth closed. Here comes the count. Remember to breathe through your mouth.
Good evening.
It's afternoon, genius. We're eating lunch, not dinner.
Yes, of course. Excuse me.
Dear God. It's as if something died.
I thought I asked you to play nice.
I am playing nice. Where did you get the bread pudding, Count? I thought they ran out.
They did, but I turned one of the kitchen staff into my meal, so he always saves me a dessert.
That's clever thinking.
Yes, I thought so too.
Yes, yes, very clever. Hey, isn't that Van Helsing?
Where?
Over there, on the other side of the room.
While the Count searches the dining hall for his nemesis, Moriarty grabs the Count's bread pudding off his tray and sets it in front of himself.
My mistake. It was just the Sheriff of Nottingham.
You look nothing alike. What happened to my bread pudding?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You know very well what I'm talking about. You stole my bread pudding.
I did nothing of the sort.
It's sitting right in front of you. You stole it from me when I wasn't looking.
That's a serious accusation. Do you have any witnesses?
In this place? Not likely. Unless...
Don't look at me. I'm not getting involved. Although I think it's worth noting that the professor is in the process of eating the evidence.
Then how shall we resolve this dilemma? Perhaps a duel? Or a battle of wits?
How about a staring contest?
Challenge accepted.
You might want to reconsider, Professor. Remember what happened the last time you accepted the Count's challenge to a staring contest?
You ended up naked and strutting around on the Schoenfelberg court like a rooster. And when we finally came around, you were perched on the roof and glaring at the sunrise.
I'm glad you both think memory loss is a laughing matter. Speaking of which, don't look now, but Mr. Blank is heading in our direction.
Who is this Mr. Blank? I've never heard of him.
He's a new arrival. A cubby, as we old-timers like to say.
Quite. But Mr. Blank still operates under the assumption that he's a bear. He hasn't yet figured out that his plans for world domination have been reduced to outdated blueprints and filed away in the archives.
Yes, much like the rest of us.
Speak for yourself, Doc. Some of us are still in our prime.
Perhaps. But not everyone who ends up at Dr. Sinister's is a candidate for hip replacement surgery or on a steady diet of high blood pressure medication. And ensure, sometimes even the best of us meet our match before we're ready to hang up our black capes or monocles.
We can agree to disagree. In the meantime, here comes Mr. Blank. Even though he's a cubby, make sure you avoid any direct eye contact.
Why do we need to avoid that?
Because Mr. Blank has the ability to steal people's memories.
Which isn't particularly threatening in a place where more than half of the residents teeter on the precipice of Alzheimer's and senility. But it's better to be safe than sorry.
Greetings, fellow villains.
Good evening.
Yeah, it's afternoon, Grandpa. Shouldn't you be in your coffin or your crypt or something?
I believe that you suffer from a case of pop culture misinformation.
Yes, contrary to propaganda you may have seen or read, sunlight does not affect me in an adverse manner.
But cut off his head, drive a stake through his heart, and you're in business.
Really?
Thanks for the tip, Professor.
Time for our lunchtime safety tip. Doomsday machines are forbidden to be operated at all times. And thank you for helping to make Dr. Sinister's a safer living space for everyone.
Mind if I join the three of you for lunch?
Yes, actually, we do mind. Go find another table to pollute.
You'll have to excuse our friend. He's never one to add any sweetener to his bitter rejoinders. It's nothing personal.
Speak for yourself, Doc.
It's just that we've been something of a literary triumvirate for more than a century, so we're somewhat particular as to our preferences for dining companions.
Yeah, particular how?
How much time do you have?
So eat me. What do I need to do to join your little literary whatever this is?
The title.
The title?
Like Judge Doom, Lord Voldemort, General Zod...
He was a fun one. I liked him.
I get it. It's like that old joke. A doctor, a professor, and a count walk into a bar.
I don't believe I've heard that one.
You'd like that one, Grandpa. You're the punchline.
The only joke around here is you, cubby. Nice laugh. Does it come with a money-back guarantee?
Yeah, I'd watch your step, Professor. Or the next time we have this little discussion, you won't remember your own name.
Ooh, such a threat.
And that goes double for you too, Grandpa.
Typical cubby. All growl and no bite.
You're popular today. First Captain Hook and now Mr. Blank. You certainly know how to make friends.
It's a retirement home for villains, Doc. We're not here to share our feelings in support groups or participate in team-building exercises.
But I am a fan. Yeah, in Geo Night and movie nights are fun, too.
Except for when Lex Luthor drinks too much absinthe and has Superman flashbacks. The screen still cracked from when he threw a lamp at the television.
That is exactly my point. Villains are violent creatures. It's our nature, which precludes us from developing honest or nurturing relationships with each other.
Yes, but we do share some common ground. For instance, we're all united in the single-minded purpose of spreading evil throughout the world. So there's a general sense of camaraderie that we all share.
That's when we're out in the real world, with evil plans to hatch and people to inflict our plans on and nemesis to battle. But gather us together to live under a single roof without any natural adversaries and to force us to share limited personal space and resources while being served questionable meals by an underpaid and indifferent staff, and the camaraderie unravels like a failed diabolical plot.
Like the food here, it reminds me of the meals my mother cooked when I was a boy.
You must have been abused as a child.
Don't look now, but it appears that Mr. Blank has found kindred souls in the Sheriff of Nottingham and the Wicked Witch of the West.
And then I cut his tongue out with a spoon.
That's almost as good as the time I set the Scarecrow on fire.
What could the three of them possibly have in common?
I have no idea, but they certainly appear to be hitting it off.
And then I said, I'd be so sorry you said that about my...
Cretans. They're nothing more than cretans.
They believe they can hear you.
I don't care. Let them hear. They can sneer and leer with their expressions of iniquity all they want. Makes no difference. We own this place.
While it's true that the three of us are among the longest tenured residents at Dr. Sinister's, the influx of modern pop culture villains and anti-heroes has altered the social landscape, causing us to lose some of our long-standing stature.
Maybe you and Count Flatulence have lost some of your stature, but my reputation precedes me.
Reputation can only get you so far in this place. Eventually, more sophisticated and powerful villains emerge, spreading a new and improved brand of evil. And before you know it, you've become obsolete. Relics of the villainous past, quaint in your outdated version of treachery. Where people once quaked in their proverbial shoes at the thought of us, appalled by our immortal exploits and terrified by our very existence, we now live in a world where villains eat their victims, shoot lightning out of their fingertips, and have developed the ability to control magnetism.
I must admit, I find Magneto rather intimidating, especially when he loses at chess. I quite enjoy that trick he can do with the spoons.
Parlor tricks and genetic abnormalities don't make for a convincing villain. When it comes to creating mayhem, we're the godfathers of nefarious iniquity.
Yes, but criminal masterminds and alter ego sociopaths can't compete with today's crop of villains. And although his supernatural powers would seem to give the Count some added cachet, his legacy has been diluted by parodies, adaptations, and updates that have rendered him little more than a caricature of his former monstrous self.
It's sad but true. As soon as vampires sparkled in the sunlight, the hiding was on the board.
The constant farting doesn't help your street credibility.
It's all of the insurer that they make us drink. What I wouldn't give for a pint of AB negative.
And you wonder why no one takes you seriously.
I know you don't want to admit that our time has passed, but at some point you're going to have to confront reality.
Maybe you and Count Suckalot here are ready to raise the white flag and surrender your status, but I have no intention of letting some 21st century cubby take my place at the head of the proverbial table.
Where are you going?
I'm going for my afternoon stroll so I can smoke my pipe and get the stench of this conversation off of me.
Could we go after him?
It won't do any good. You know how he gets when he's in one of his moods.
Yes, he gets rather morose. Shall we retire to the Grand Lounge?
Hello in there. Hello.
We go with Dr. Jekyll and Dracula to the Grand Lounge where the Big Bad Wolf and the Queen of Hearts are playing cards. The Grand Lounge is a bit of a misnomer, as the lounge is more plebeian than palatial. Stuffed with secondhand furniture and decorated with cheap lamps and threadbare area rugs, the Grand Lounge suffers from an identity crisis. But in spite of the less than opulent decor, it's where many of the residents of Dr. Sinister's gather to plot, scheme, and play the occasional not-so-friendly game of backgammon or parcheesi. Blood has been spilled more than once over claims of cheating and telepathic mind reading. As a general rule, villains tend to be sore losers.
Please refrain from turning the other residents into mutants. And thank you for respecting the rights of your fellow villains.
The Big Bad Wolf and the Queen of Hearts sit across from one another at a scuffed oval tea table, playing a game of cards.
The worst. If you win, I'll eat you. Just like I devoured that little girl's grandmother and those three little pigs.
Poppycock, I'll chop off your furry head before you can get so much as a nibble, you mangy, flea-infested jackal. Do you have any queens?
Go fish!
The air smells of disinfectant and stale urine.
I'm afraid that incontinence strikes even the most villainous amongst us. Even Hannibal Lecter had to wear Depends.
Well, he did it well. Whatever happened to him?
He and the White Witch teamed up to open a chain of fast food restaurants called Hannibal and Gretel's. And I heard that Cruella de Vil opened up an exclusive bed and breakfast for dog owners.
Good for them. It always warms my cold heart when I hear about other retired villains making a fresh start.
Speaking of fresh starts...
Dorian Gray enters the Grand Lounge, carrying a knife and looking bereaved.
Has anyone seen my picture? I need to find my picture. It's a matter of life and death.
He's always moping about. That one is so serious. I think I saw it in Long John Silver's room.
Oh, thank you.
That should make for an interesting interaction.
I'd like to be a fly on the wall for that conversation.
Well, you can turn into a bat, you know.
I'm too comfortable at the moment to bother. Besides, I want to finish my book.
What are you reading?
Interview with a Vampire.
Is it any good?
The author is no Bram Stoker. But it's not bad. What are you writing in your journal?
Just some observations about the characters who live here. I know it's probably delusions of grandeur, but I have aspirations that someone will want to publish my memoirs.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Am I in there?
Naturally. You're one of my closest friends.
So you say nice things about me?
Of course.
Is Moriarty in there too?
Yes, but he mocks my endeavors. On numerous occasions, he's told me my ideas are trite, and my writing is overly florid, and filled with cliches.
He's just jealous that you found a hobby. Something that makes you happy and fulfilled. Don't let him drag you down into his morass of negativity.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not going to let him deter me. I have a unique insight into some of the most notorious villains of literature, television, and film.
Good for you.
I've met Norman Bates, Emma Frost, Agent Smith, Walter White, Annie Wilkes, the Joker, Patrick Bateman, Morgan Le Fay, Emperor Palpatine, Gordon Gekko, Randall Flagg, Bellatrix Lestrange, Ernst Blofeld, Hans Gruber, Two-Face, Milo Minderbender, the Green Goblin, Nurse Ratched, and Dr. Belloc, among others.
Oh, don't forget about Dr. Doom, Dr. No, Dr. Octopus, Dr. Manhattan, Dr. Evil, and Dr. Moreau.
Yes, that's right, and I've been here to see them all. I have a story to tell, and I plan to tell it.
That's the spirit. What's the theme going to be?
It's going to be about how even villains eventually find themselves staring into the abyss of irrelevance.
Hey, that does not sound very cheery.
It's also going to be about how friendship can blossom in the most unlikely of circumstances.
Oh, an against all odds story. I like the sound of that. Tell me more.
Well, obviously it's about you, Moriarty, and me.
Obviously.
And I've been thinking about how the three of us have managed to remain friends, in spite of our villainous nature. I think it's because we've known each other for so long that we've grown comfortable with one another. Our habits, our traits, our threats.
Yes, I suppose you can only promise to strangle someone or beat them to death or drink their blood so many times before it becomes predictable.
Once you reach that point, the threats lose their teeth and become a source of dark amusement.
Especially when you've been smoking medical marijuana. By the way, I've run out. Do you know anyone who might have some extra?
I believe Rumpelstiltskin grows his own, so you might want to check with him.
He's a vile little creature, that one. He spits in people's drinks when they're not looking. Just yesterday, Skeletor said he saw the diminutive little imp urinating in a swimming pool.
Probably best to skip the water aerobics classes then. Although I believe most of the residents have tended to avoid the swimming pool ever since the Dr. Kanaga incident.
Please note, the swimming pool is not a shark pit. And also, no running or diving allowed.
Ha ha ha! I win again!
You cheated!
Oh, I did not. You're just a sore loser, you overgrown ringworm-infected chihuahua.
Chihuahua!
Loser! Plus you smell like wet dog. La 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 la.
Every day, their threats escalating until one of them wins and the other lets out a scream or a roar of frustration and storms off.
I've had some fun at the Queen of Hearts, but that other fellow, let's just say I've never been much of a fan of fairy tale villains.
Nor have I. But you have to admit, while they aren't much on conversation, fairy tale villains know how to throw a party.
Yes, although last time I attended one of their parties, all they talked about was cooking children, devouring elderly women, and terrorizing pigs.
Not a lot of common ground to be had there.
Definitely not, although I do miss terrorizing people.
We all do, Count. We all do.
The Phantom of the Opera is here, beside your chair.
I liked you better before you became enamored with the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical.
But I do like having my own theme song whenever I enter a room.
Oh, can I have one too?
Everyone should have their own theme song.
How about Psycho Killer by the Talking Heads?
Qu'est-ce que c'est? That's a good one. But I think Norman Bates is using that one. So you might want to check with him first. You know how he gets.
What do you want? As if I didn't know.
Do you want to watch the freak show again?
Freak show?
Several months ago, the Phantom convinced me to accompany him into the Big Bad Wolf's bedroom closet to play a prank. I thought we were going to jump out at the Big Bad Wolf when he opened the closet door, or perhaps wait until he went to sleep before we snuck out to frighten him.
The proverbial monster is in the closet, eh?
Quite. Although frightening an ill-tempered and violent carnivore probably isn't the smartest idea.
Not particularly. He doesn't have much of a sense of humor, speaking from experience.
But instead of jumping out of the closet, the Phantom cracks open the closet door just enough for us to get a glimpse into the room where the Big Bad Wolf is lying naked on the bed.
Oh, my.
Right.
Anyway, before I can object or scrub the image from my mind, the bedroom door opens and the Queen of Hearts sneaks in, closing and locking the door behind her.
What happened next?
Faster than you can say, I'll huff and I'll puff. She bursts out of her corset and out of her royal undergarments, climbs on top of the Big Bad Wolf, and rides him like a mechanical bull until he lets loose with a howl.
Oh, dear.
Those are 3 minutes of my life I will never get back.
So what do you say, Doc?
I'll pass.
How about you, Count? Care to join me for a little afternoon matinee?
I think I prefer to stay here and read my book.
Suit yourself.
If there's one thing I can't stand, it's a show-off.
I like his cape.
As Dr. Jekyll writes down notes in his journal, the Count continues to read Interview with the Vampire, one hand holding the paperback, while he absentmindedly bites at the back of his other hand.
Do you have to do that?
Do what?
That.
This?
Yes. That.
Does it bother you?
Well, considering that you've admitted to deriving sexual pleasure from the act of sucking blood, it seems like something you should do in the privacy of your own room.
I find it comforting.
While I realize you're not attempting to annoy me on purpose, I have to warn you that if you continue to make your sucking sounds, I might have to give in to my inner evil nature and bash in your skull with a hammer.
I'd like to see you try. What do you suppose is going on outside by the swimming pool?
Probably another shark pit fiasco. Either that, or someone finally caught Rumpelstiltskin in the act.
But what about the maniacal laughter?
It's a home for retired villains. There's always maniacal laughter. Plus, it's Pennywise. He's always laughing maniacally about something. It's probably a false alarm.
But what if it is not a false alarm?
Okay, let's go take a look.
We follow the residents of the home outside to the pool. When the Count and Dr. Jekyll reach the others, a small crowd has gathered. They glance into the swimming pool, where a body floats face down in the deep end, his arms outstretched, scattered brown leaves drifting in the water around him, a ribbon of red flowing out from his neck, twisting through the water like a scarlet snake.
Is that the cubby?
Yes. It appears Mr. Blank has met his final match. Did anyone see what happened?
Not me.
Ask him if he urinated in the swimming pool.
I witnessed nothing. Don't even think about it.
Anyone else see anything?
I didn't see anything. No. What's going on here?
More residents show up to get an eyeful and satisfy their lust for blood, including the big bad wolf and the Queen of Hearts, her hair disheveled and a single stocking bunched up at one ankle. The Wicked Witch of the West watches from behind one of the windows in the Grand Lounge, refusing to come outside and get anywhere near the swimming pool.
You don't suppose Moriarty had something to do with this?
I don't know, but here he comes.
My. What's happened here?
Someone killed a cubby! Someone killed a cubby! Someone killed a cubby! Someone killed a cubby!
Is that so? Pity.
So, did you enjoy your afternoon walk, Moriarty?
Yes. Quite.
Three of Dr. Sinister's henchmen arrive, pushing through the crowd to the edge of the pool.
All right. Nothing to see here you haven't seen before. Folks, Eddie, go get the grappling hook.
Okay, everyone. Clear out of the way and give us some room. Let's go.
No.
No.
There sure are a lot of pouty faces.
Can you blame them? After all, while death isn't an anomaly at Dr. Sinister's, we don't often get to experience moments such as these that allow us to remember how it felt to vanquish an adversary and stand in triumph over a fallen victim. In a way, you could say we've all become victims, not of each other, but of our own nostalgia. Wishing for the good old days when we existed in perpetual relevance. Now, all we have left to nourish our souls are the memories of our villainous exploits.
And the occasional dead body? Floating in a mixture of blood and chlorinated water.
Easy there, Eddie. Make sure you hook him good.
Maybe it's the light, but you seem to have a twinkle in your eye that wasn't there earlier.
Is that so?
Moriarty, the Count, and Dr. Jekyll linger outside the French doors, soaking up as much of the ambience as they can as the henchmen drag Mr. Blank's lifeless corpse from the swimming pool.
Sometimes it's the little things in life.
You have just listened to Dr. Sinister's Home for Retired Villains, a radio play written by S.G. Brown and performed by KFJC's own pandemic player safely and remotely over Zoom. The cast included Robert Emmett as Professor Moriarty, Earl Grey as Dr. Jekyll, Avakov as Mr. Hyde, the Big Bad Wolf, and Dorian Gray, Mr. Slippy as Count Dracula and Rumpelstiltskin, Devlin as the announcer, henchman number one, Mr. Blank, and the Phantom of the Opera, Slarty Bartfast as Captain Hook, henchman number two, the Sheriff of Nottingham, and Pennywise the Clown, Ann Arbor as the Wicked Witch of the West, the Queen of Hearts, and Lady Macbeth. Directed by Ann Arbor, sound designed by Devlin.
The musical bed was two versions of John Prine's Hello in There, performed by John Prine and Martin Solon.
And I, Sam Yorko, as Hans Gruber and your faithful narrator. Stay safe and stay tuned to KFJC for yet another exciting episode presented by the Pandemic Players. Or go to kfjc.org and click the Pandemic Players logo to access our archive.